Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. My name's William English, and today's guest is Clive Graham. Welcome back, Clive.
Hi.
Clive is the CEO of Paradigm Discs, one-time presenter of Sound Poets Exposed many moons ago. And this is your latest release. I think the last time you came on was Curse Go Back by William Burroughs, which
yeah.
only seems like a few weeks ago. You've got quite a production line going there, haven't you?
Just at the moment. Well, it's partly because of the Burroughs thing. It's allowed me to to put out some more stuff, really. It's because it sold moderately well compared with almost everything else I've done, which is not sold at all. So, although this one's did well. This is the first record I've put out that...
This current one is the first here at the moment.
I'll come on to that, shall I? What we're listening to right now is like track one from a record that I have previously released on CD. So it's kind it's the first time I've reissued one of my own titles. But I thought I'd do it because it was like a 40th year anniversary edition. And I thought it would give it a new lease of life because the CD of this came out in the sort of mid to late 90s. And I guess a lot of people who are buying music now won't have even realised that this ever came out because it's kind of, nobody buys it on CD anymore. So, younger people.
Vinyl. Your latest issue is on vinyl.
So it's just a sort of like a run of 500. I thought I'd do it. And also the artist wanted to do something with a sort of anniversary edition. In fact, last year he did perform a kind of version of this very track, which is the opening track, which is called Black Crack and the Soul Survivors, and is really the central core conceptual track that holds the whole thing together. Because the album's called Beyond the Black Crack, and the full artist name is Anal Magic and Reverend Dwight Frizzell, which is quite a kind of like, an unusual
Indeed.
Artist name, to say the least. But it's all full of these little conceptual things that he had on the go at the time. He's quite a strange guy. He is actually a real reverend, it has to be said.
Okay. In which denomination?
It's not a very strict church. I think they're called the Universal Church of Life or some such thing. I'd have to look it up, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the Universal Life Church. In any case,
which
it's not...
Which tolerates anal magic.
I don't know what it tolerates. It's basically, it's very open to, in fact, when I met Dwight in Kansas, which is where he's from, and he suggested that he ordain me.
As of reverend. Universal Church of Light.
He had various, whatever the words are that, kind of like levels of... of churchdom that I could have been initiated into.
Yes.
At a mere cost of $10 and no knowledge of the Bible required. I guess only in the Midwest. No, but it is legit, and it is.
Legit in what sense?
He can marry people, for instance.
And that's legal.
He does weddings and funerals.
If you had been ordained, could you marry people?
Yes.
For $10.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Okay. No, he can... you have to fill in the paperwork to become the reverend, and you have to fill in the paperwork when you wed people or even inter them, which he does, weddings and funerals, for 30-odd years.
Had you paid the $10 and been ordained,
yes,
you would also be able to inter people?
Maybe not in this country.
No.
Maybe not. But he does, I don't think he does so many funerals as weddings. He does quite a few weddings, people he knows. And, makes it all legally binding and everything. And his deal is that, I'll do it as long as I can play in the band after when we have the party, the wake or the festivities.
How many members are there in the Universal Church of Life?
I don't know.
Was it a vast congregation? Does he have his
own
church?
My interest in it is very minimal, I have to say. I only know that this is the case.
I'm deeply curious.
Well, I don't have the answer.
Okay.
And I have met someone that he ordained as well, another reverend who actually was in Ireland recently, and he passed by through London and stayed with me. And he was one of his students, because he also happens to be a professor. Dwight Frizzell is also a professor.
Professor of what?
It's in the art faculty, and I think it was mainly to do with video and also soundtrack, but fine art as well. He can range widely.
Yes.
Because he's been at the Art Institute really since he was, and that's where he graduated from.
Uh-huh.
And that's where this piece was recorded.
So this originates from 1976, is that right? Or
It was released in 76, and it says here in the sleeve notes, originally released to commemorate the first annual End of the World celebration. And it was released in November 18th, 1976, hence the 40-year anniversary last November when I released this.
Right.
So in actual fact, this recording we're listening to now, the first track,
yeah,
which we've heard quite a chunk of, it's coming to an end, actually. Is
two minutes.
Yeah.
So this
actual track was recorded in 75. Yeah.
Okay. And the title of this is Black Crack and the Soul Survivors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are the guys.
And there's a whole list of
performers. And you'll see there's another reverend in there as well. Reverend Tommy Gomersall on tin cans, piano and vocals.
Right. Is there a spiritual element to the music, do you think, or is he more of a
mythical one than spiritual as well? I mean, Dwight Frizzell was quite a close friend of Sun Ra's, who would often kind of pass through Kansas, you know, when he was doing gigs and stuff.
Yeah.
And in fact, the band used to stay at his quite substantial house that he lives in and has lived in, with a bunch of other people, and now. Yeah. More just with his wife, but so the band would actually stay there, there's a lot of phone contact between the two of them on issues. Okay. Like they were inspirations to each other in some strange way.
But you wouldn't have encountered this record the first time around.
You're not at all.
No,
it came out the very same week as Anarchy in the UK.
Yes.
No, I found out about this record. Through the way most people will have done, which is through the fact it's on the Nurse with Wound list. Thing called the Nurse with Wound list, which is like a long list of bands that and artists that had inspired the record collecting habits of the three guys that comprised Nurse with Wound in 1979. Uh-huh. And this was on that list. And I used to kind of like go through that list sort of thinking, what is this? I must hear this.
Yeah.
And eventually did hear the record, and in fact I just phoned him up. This is back in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
I just phoned him up and in Kansas had a long chat, and we arranged to reissue that album, which originally came out in an edition of 200 copies, silkscreen covers, with this cover. And but it was in mono in the end, which is not really that great. So
So there were 200 copies in the 70s when it first came out.
Yeah.
And then you contacted him in the 90s to do the CD.
Yeah.
This
is the last note, so you might... Don't let it run into the next lot.
No, it won't.
No. Oh, good.
It's single player.
Single player. We're in a DJ booth, so... I forget these things.
Yeah.
So that was the whole of track one there.
Yes.
I mean, as you can see, it's like a very heavy... Well, I mean, if we'd been listening to it in any concentrated way with a bit of volume, you'd realise it's a very cut up and altered thing from a concert that actually lasted 24 hours. They had the studio for 24 hours. It's actually not a recording studio. It was just one of the buildings in the arts faculty.
Right.
And people came and went, mucked around. And I mean, they were teenagers at the time, and then from that he cut and edited all this stuff. But it revolves around a metronome that clicks at 2 times a second. You hear it all the way through that piece, which is another part of the one of the rigors of the piece. Is it's got this metronome beat. And so anyway, last year he did a reenactment of it, which I was involved in the same building, and And yeah, it's interesting that he's been there all those years as a student and then as a teacher and now as a professor. So it's, and he even lives about a mile away. So it's very, very parochial thing going on there with him. And
so you contacted him by phone, first of all, in the 90s. How long had your label been going at that time?
It was pretty new, actually. It had been going a couple of years, maybe three at most.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So how many sort of releases would you have had by this?
This was number six.
Okay.
And so prior to that was a couple of compilations of London artists, a CD of Pauline Oliveros's early electronic work, which is a great thing to have got onto in 95. Mm-hmm. You know, because, I don't think anyone in this country has released any Pauline Oliveros. I think I'm the only person to have done it. So that was quite an honour. Again, I just phoned her up because, I mean, there weren't really that many choices at the time. This seems like an antiquated thing to do, but it's a good way of contacting people, I think.
She died recently, didn't she?
She did indeed, yes. Yeah. Yes.
By complete coincidence, I had played a track of hers the week before.
Yeah.
I did a sort of an accordion programme.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a week later, I heard that she died. It was quite sort of a bit uncanny, actually.
Yes. She was a great accordion player.
Yeah. And I had a track of hers on. There's an Orange record. Is it Bye Bye Butterfly?
Yeah.
That one, which comes in with a sort of sampled kind of
but in fact, that
orchestra
track,
piece.
That, yes, it's Puccini, Madame Butterfly.
Right.
Hence the title. And yeah. I that's one of the pieces I put out because it's from 1965, composed in San Francisco Tate Music Center. And a very pioneering piece. And so there was that track and two others on that CD.
Yeah.
And so otherwise, there was also a Morphogenesis CD I put out and a Trevor Wishart. Those are the other ones that came out prior to this release. So
was this the first reissue that you did?
No, the Trevor Wishart was a reissue.
Right.
And the Oliveros was partially, I suppose you could say, but it was not, I mean, it compiles two or three different releases and has unreleased material.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got more into reissuing as time went on, really, because there's always been and continues to be a much bigger interest in reissues than new material. That's the kind of world we live in.
Yeah.
Everything's revival. There's nothing valid anymore in...
Now then, let's not get too pessimistic.
Well, there are a few standout artists, and I always like to mention Adam Bowman and anybody that works around that nucleus. And I do think he's one of the original voices. But completely unknown, really, outside of the UK.
There was something at Café Otto on Tuesday, wasn't there, which is a Bowman get-together, him and his brother. And
It was a double kind of thing. It was that plus a launch for an album that has just been put out by a group that features Adam Bowman. So there was that aspect to it. But there was also the fact that there were lots of people who'd worked with Adam since the 80s and 90s. And they were just... So they're all friends, really, of mine.
Uh-huh.
You know, people I've known for a long, long time. Lepke played a set at the end, a very good set. And then there were various sort of duos and whatnot through the evening. I just DJ'd, you know.
Right.
I wasn't the blushing bride in any sense.
So is it crass to ask, do you make money out of these, out of your enterprise as a distributor, and a publisher?
Do you make any money?
Exactly. Have you been able
broadcast
to give up the day job?
No.
No.
I still have the same day job I've had for the last 17 years, which is an unusual thing in itself, although that's always been part-time. So,
can we ask what this is?
You can, yes. I work in a library at the London School of Economics. Just a couple of days a week.
Right.
And, it's been a stable situation for that whole duration. Thank God, really, because God knows what I'd be doing otherwise. You know.
Yeah. So having your own record label and reviving obscure tracks from the 70s is not a viable proposition.
Not for me. I don't really have that ability to make the inroads that one needs to, or the natural charisma that seems to go
come, Clive.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it. I, you know, I just you know, it's a touchy issue, I guess, really. I mean, I hear a lot of things that I think are pretty awful, and yet those artists do. And I'm not going to say, I'm not going to name names, obviously. Yeah. I know you're going to pressurize. Who do you mean? But who is it you think that gets a lot more attention than they deserve? But for me, there are a number of people, and have been over the years, that just seem to sort of rocket into this successful arena. And I'm thinking, how and why did that ever happen? You know,
what, doing a similar thing to what you're doing?
I suppose, well, not.
Or
well,
are you willfully obscure?
You tend to
pick on the difficult ones, don't you?
I just like things. Well, I definitely like things to be something of that I'm personally interested in that perhaps hasn't been covered before. So that tends towards that direction, really.
Yes.
And yes, when I look at the catalogue, I think, you know, there are a lot of things here that you know, it's a real mixed bag. It does cross a lot of different terrain.
It's a question of integrity. You're trying to hang on to sort of artistic integrity by picking these difficult issues.
Yeah, but for me, they're just things that I would love to see to come out. You know, yeah.
The Burroughs must have been quite popular.
Yeah, you see, I mean, things changed a little bit with that one. You know, so that did quite well and continues to, I think, really. It's slowing down. I haven't sold any for a while. But, they're out there and they continue to sell.
But that's gone into second editions, hasn't it? Or is it even more, possibly?
Yeah. There was a second pressing of that. And, and that's done okay. And, you know, I expect there'll be more over the course, maybe this year even. So that has kind of fueled this, you know, getting back into doing things again. Yeah. Partly, I mean, all my releases up until even quite recently were on CD, partly because the titles are long, you know, they're 70-minute things, you know, anthologies and archival work really suits the CD, but very few people buy them. I don't know why, you know, it's again one of these things. So this is
keeps cropping up in the papers, doesn't it? It's about the vinyl revival and so on. It's sort of so CDs are going by the wayside.
But, well,
some people are issuing on cassette, aren't they?
Yeah.
Would you ever dream of
No. It's bad enough going back to vinyl. You know, when you're sort of working digitally anyway. I mean, everything's digitally mastered, and then you have to step back to cut it and press it through all these kind of, you know, arcane sort of rituals of cutting records and, you know, creating lacquers and plates and all the rest of it. I mean, I don't see how any of that's going to improve anything. Okay. But, of course, records are lovely to do, and they're lovely to, you know, I quite like having them around as well. They have all that baggage attached to them, don't they? So whereas a CD is often pretty, pretty ugly.
Yeah.
So there's certainly no aesthetic in the visual aspect. But how far do you want to go with visuals on something that is audio? You know, really. So
are you ever offered things that would be more commercially?
No, I don't think so. No one's offered me anything commercial. I've been offered quite a few things that would be an absolute dead loss, but and I've not done those. I've never released anything that anyone sent me. Never. You know.
Okay. It is Friday the 13th today, isn't it? It's like... We're sounding a bit doomy.
What's
your advice to an aspiring record distributor?
Distributor? Do you mean label?
Somebody, if a young person...
Just do it, you know. I mean, yeah. I think people should do what they feel. Because I think, you know, and I still feel this now for myself, is that if I just keep tenaciously going at it, eventually, you know, there will be some, you know, it'll be worth it, you know, from a financial point of view. Because that'd be quite nice, really, I suppose. I mean, in every other sense, it's.
So do you get the rights then? I mean, from what you've just said, you're saying in the long run, so if something sells out, if you sell all 200 of whatever it is you've issued,
yeah,
can you then make money out of it in the future?
Well, I mean, you know, I have various contracts with the artists, which, you know, they're different. They're normally like 50-50 splits on profit. I mean, it's got very basic stuff. Other artists demand a certain amount up front when you manufacture.
But you're suggesting that perhaps at some, you know, in 5 years' time or something, there would be a demand for one of your releases, and it would continue to produce something.
Yeah, well, 5 years' time, it's very hard to say, isn't it? I mean, You can't say what things are going to be like in 5 years' time in terms of, you know, all these in terms of media, because it could all just be downloads by then.
Right.
Okay. It could quite easily be that, couldn't it? Really. And I think a lot of people who buy records. This is the other curious thing about vinyl buying people is that a lot of records come with download codes. This one doesn't, but. People just they shelve the vinyl, never play it, don't have record players, and just download the audio, which you get the free access to with the code, and then play it on their phones or whatever gizmos that people play back. I don't know.
I've heard that some vinyls they retain their value if they're still sort of shrink wrapped, as it were. So people store them away and then sell them at an inflated price.
They always have held their value. Records certainly as against CDs, which always depreciate. It seems, and which is the great thing about CDs now is you can get some amazingly cheap ones.
Yes,
you know, I mean, including all of mine.
For
dirt cheap prices, either on eBay or Discogs. So go. Shopping for CDs, that's what I say, even though
should we mention a certain shop on the South Bank, or should we keep that to ourselves?
I don't even know which one you mean for the moment.
You do, the eccentric owner.
Do you mean Gramex?
You've said it now.
Yeah, I said it. Why shouldn't we mention Gramex?
Okay, well, that's quite a curious place, isn't it?
Yeah.
I saw it, you mentioned it the other day, I noticed.
Yeah.
And I found it for the first time about a year ago. And
did you?
It is a fairly strange CD shop, it has to be said.
Yeah.
Where the CDs are all laid flat on tables.
In stacks. Yeah.
So in order to read the title, you have to pick up the whole stack in one hand.
Yeah.
And sort of read it and then put it back again.
Well, that's right.
Whilst the owner, who's sort of usually, who I don't know, how old is he? 75?
He's 18. Older than he looks, I believe.
Yes.
And his name's Roger, that much I know.
And he's usually sort of wearing shorts or something, and he's asleep in a kind of tatty armchair in the corner.
Yeah, was this the shop? Was it because the last time I went there, when I mentioned it on Twitter or whatever it was, that was the first time I'd been to that shop because previously they were across the road. Anyway, and they've had a couple of addresses over the years, and certainly back in the 90s and 80s when it was like a vinyl only thing. Nothing was organised. It was all just one big mass of vinyl, most of it being opera, but all of it being classical repertoire. But if there was anything avant-garde in there, chances are it would be completely underpriced. And some occasionally you'd get things you don't see very often, very cheap. And
I picked up a John Berger thing called Cadmium Red, which I played about 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Which I thought that was quite a find. I'd never heard of it before. And then there it was, this sort of John Berger's strange sort of dialogue between him and somebody else.
So
it's in the basement of a bookshop, isn't it? You wouldn't know it was there unless you had to.
I didn't know it was there. I thought they'd shut. But I went into a charity shop and I was in there for a while. And then I spoke to the shop assistant there and said, "What ever happened to Gramex?" And she said, "Oh, they've moved downstairs to the. Just along the road." So I thought, good, great. Because, I mean, you just wouldn't know it was there.
No.
You know. And he was fast asleep during the entirety of my visit. No one else in the shop.
Right.
You know, so like, it's just, you know, you could have just helped yourself. But
the gentle clacking of CDs.
But there's some of the great conversations I've heard in that shop. Because a lot of people that play at the South Bank, including conductors and, you know, first violinists and all this kind of type, they go in there and they have these heavy, intense conversations about classical music. It's just great lending an ear to sort of hear the conversation because they've all got... You know, and then you'll find that people will pitch in that are in the shop. It used to be quite a busy little hub.
Yeah.
All people with an incredible knowledge that I don't understand the first thing of. And they used to have these big kind of, I don't know what they call these leather studded chairs. I can't remember the word for them. But they had several big, you know, kind of clubby type... Pall Mall chairs and sofas that people would just sit in.
It's a bit like a club, isn't it? There's a little clique of people who all know each other. If you, when I went in, it's like you're an outsider.
Oh yeah,
you've come into the shop. And,
oh yeah, completely.
It's who's this that's come in?
No, but it's not hostile because
no.
Roger's super friendly with everybody that comes in. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Indeed. Anyway,
so that's Gramex, and it's mostly classical CDs.
A few jazz, that's it.
Yeah.
But mainly opera. That's their real, that's what they're really into.
Yeah.
as I gather.
Now let's get back to the Black Crack then. This is your latest issue, which has just come out, has it? It's available.
It came
now.
Out on the 40th anniversary, more or less, in November.
Beyond the Black Crack, and in my complete naivety, I had no idea what it referred to when you first mentioned it to me. Well, the cover says it all, doesn't it?
Well, that's a graphic. That's... No, there is a whole blurb here, which is kind of weird and nonsensical in many ways. But it's to do with black holes and moving through time slips.
Yes.
But there is a pair of buttocks on the cover. It has to be said. And
is this what the Black Crack refers to?
No, not really. No? I think that's more of a sort of comedy cover in a way.
Well, the second track is called Hot Poop on Black Crack.
No, it's not.
Is on there.
That's just the description of that track.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. Sorry.
Yeah. So that explains what that Black Crack.
It's in sort of capital letters, Hot Poop on Black Crack and the Soul Survivors.
Yeah.
And then there's a sort of little blurb underneath it, which is the first time I've seen this, actually. The world becomes obvious to the obvious and strange to others. On Tuesday, November the 18th, 1975, around 9:30 p.m., the world ends as we know it because of a black hole. And then it gives a dimension, 10.22 centimetres in diameter, sucking on the universe. Black Crack and the Soul Survivors escape near black holeness through a black crack and enter the real time zone, and everything else is suspended. Is this part of his outlook as a reverend? Is he serious about this?
He's worked with this mythology that he's generated about this particular piece, and he comes back to things. He doesn't really drop things once he's started a project. They can always be regenerated and reworked and rethought through. And he is certainly very much into his own little mythology that he's created.
So it's sort of an apocalyptic thing.
There's certainly an element of that on this side of the record, because the next track is a bunch of live pieces which are totally different and by a little group called Frederick's Cosmic Spaced Out Blues Band and Orchestra. And the tracks there, again, we're coming back to this kind of anally sort of fixated concept, which is only persists on this side. The other side is... it's a totally different concept, which is called Turtle Music, the B-side.
Right.
And arguably the better side, but they're both great. So the three tracks that are left on this side are Hot Fudge, Get It Out of Your System, and Chili Supper Polka.
Right.
Let's hear...
Shall we play something?
Yeah, why not play... something? I mean, you could play track four, which is the two-minute piece.
Okay, all right.
Chili Supper Polka. Thank you.
Okay, so that was Hot Fudge.
That was Chili Supper Polka.
Was it?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Hot Fudge was
It might
the...
as well have been Hot Fudge.
Which one was Hot Fudge? That's track two. This is Chili Supper Polka.
Yeah.
Inspired by Janis Jones, it says.
Yes.
Do we know who Janis Jones is?
No.
Okay.
I think she might... Is she not in the lineup anywhere?
Ah.
Yes, Janis Jones.
She's
the
in
the... orchestra on violin, she's credited as playing.
Right, okay.
So... I don't know who she is, though.
All right.
I never met her.
Well, it's dedicated to her.
So that was from 74, actually. I just noticed. So it would have been mid to late teens, and recorded at the RLDS Church, Chili Supper, March 24th.
Didn't you go to In Search of This Burroughs LP? When you were doing the Burroughs LP, you went to Kansas, didn't you?
Well, that's just, I mean, that...
So just did this tie in with that somehow, visit to Kansas?
No, the Burroughs tied in with this, yeah, because I was going to Kansas anyway to do this gig with Dwight Frizzell and a bunch of other people at the Art Institute. And
it wasn't Adam Bowman with you?
No, not on that occasion.
Ah, sorry. That's another one.
No, okay. just me.
Okay, and so you were headed to Kansas.
Yeah.
Ostensibly to visit the Reverend Frizzell.
Yeah.
So tell me about that. How was that? What was the trip like?
It was good. I mean, you know, a lot of it was... I spent a lot of the time with them, with Rhonda and Dwight in their house, which is like on Warwick. I say Warwick, not Warwick.
Not Warwick. Yeah.
Warwick Avenue,
yeah.
Which is in a sort of suburb of Kansas City. And we trekked out a little bit to where Dwight was born and where these things were recorded, which is an interesting part. It's another sort of more remote suburb of Kansas. Kansas is an odd place because it's actually half of it is not even in Kansas State. Half of it is in Missouri.
Right.
And in fact... my stay there was entirely in the Missouri side. And Dwight himself is from, and where these recordings were made, and where the Art Institute is, not the Art Institute, that's in Kansas, but where a lot of the recordings were done, a lot of the stuff on the B side is at a place called Independence, Missouri, which is where Harry S. Truman is from.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, so he grew up with Harry Truman as like his neighbor, because he'd retired by then.
Right.
And from being president, and was just this elderly chap who retired back to Independence, and you know, just he had his little security detail, but essentially he went back home, yeah. You know, just back to Independence.
Right.
And so there's a lot of Truman kind of related stuff there, museums, his house, there's a library,
yeah.
And so Dwight got quite into this concept of like being in the living on the same patch as the guy who okayed the atomic bomb, you know. That became another sort of thing.
Okay. Yes. You know.
In fact, he got investigated by the FBI at a certain point for going through the Harry Truman's trash cans.
You are joking.
Yeah, looking for.
But he started rooting through his trash cans.
Yeah, yeah, just looking for anything that he might be able to sort of. Well, he also made a film called Harry's Shadow, which is like a half-hour video film. Detailing, the last days.
Like a sort of stalker in a way.
Well, they had the same barber, you know. They would sort of like, he would go to the barbers and Harry would be there having his hair cut.
So Harry Truman keeps seeing this guy sort of turning up, sort of going through his rubbish making a video.
It's just a neighbour. I mean, yeah. Independence
is a neighbour.
It's a small place, Independence. Yeah. It's not, everyone's going to know Harry, obviously.
Uh-huh.
So, you'd be tottering down the street with his walking...
Everyone's going to go through his trash can and make a video about it.
Well, yeah, Dwight's an artist. You know, he's looking for material for his film. There's lots of stills in the film of, like, letterheads of things he just retrieved from the bin, you know.
It's amazing he wasn't arrested and he was
detained.
I'll bet, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, the B-side...
Have you seen the film?
Yeah, it's a great film.
Is it?
It's really well put together. Lots of. Okay. It's a bit like your film.
Oh, thank you very much, Clive.
It's a bit
thank
like,
you.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
It's very nice of you to say so.
Yeah. But in the sense that there's lots of, archival stuff, footage of Harry, and also,
my film's called Heated Gloves, by the way. I'll just give a quick plug there.
So there's Heated Gloves and Harry's Shadow, two good films.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Which could bring us to, you have another project in the pipeline, or perhaps we should save that for another day.
Well, as you wish.
Well, you could quickly mention that you are, in the future, you will be releasing.
I have actually even said quite recently that maybe the next thing will be some of Maurice Seddon's phone conversations.
Absolutely.
As a vinyl release, just a single LP. Yeah. It's still kind of fomenting as an idea and how it's going to hang together. So there's not much to say right now. But
the film fermented for about 30 years.
No, oh God.
It's one of those things. It's like slow drip.
Well, this shouldn't take so long.
Filtering through 10 tons of charcoal or whatever it is. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you've got the photography and...
Yes.
It'd be an odd one to do a show on, which is a release that both of us are involved in.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So that's something for the future. So people out there that are interested... people keep asking me for a DVD, but I'm not going to issue it on DVD yet. But Clive will at some point, probably within the next year, be issuing the Seddon tapes on vinyl.
That's the title, isn't it? I guess the Seddon tapes.
The Seddon
nice.
Tapes, I think so, yeah.
Sounds nice. I like it already.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously the artist.
So carry on with your story about you're in Kansas with the Reverend Frizzell.
Yeah, I went for a full...
How old is he now? Is he roughly...
Oh.
That's not an ageist question. I'm just curious to know how he's weathering life.
Good question. He's certainly got 10 years on me.
Right.
So that put him to, I think he's mid-60s.
Oh, he's still a young springer then. That's not
He is quite sprightly. He is. Because we went on a big trek into the Ozarks, which is like a mountainous region in southern Missouri near the borders with Arkansas.
Right.
Which is absolutely astonishing. It's kind of Mark Twain. I nearly said John Wayne. It's Mark Twain country. I think he was a Missouri man. And so it was quite nice sort of being in that wilderness territory. Fantastic. Yeah. Mm. It's also known as the Irish wilderness, but there were some beautiful places to see down there.
So you had sought him out with a view. You came to him and said, I would like to reissue your vinyl, your record from 74, 75.
Yeah.
What's he doing now? I mean, is there anything that would be worth recording now? Or would you?
I did actually release a later... A bunch of things, which included some outtakes from this record, there were so many good outtakes.
Yeah.
And then some new material, including a couple of very long pieces, a half-hour piece that was very complex in its and ambitious, and also recorded in a church. But
so where are these?
It's called Natural Selection, which...
It's a
CD I put out. Also, his film soundtracks. There were a few film soundtracks that I included on that release earlier. Things.
So these are all available on Paradigm Discs.
Yep, that is. Yeah, Natural Selection is still around.
And they just to go to your website, is it stalk.net? That's how I've
stalk.net/paradigm.
Yeah.
Let's have something from side two. Come on, we need to get on with this thing.
Fair enough. Which track?
I don't know. Why not let's start at the beginning of side two, which is Turtle Music. And the first track is called Journey of Turtles.
Well, you'll have to tell me which number track it is.
Oh, well, that'll be track five.
Five, okay. That's... Thank you. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. Today's guest is Clive Graham of Paradigm Discs, and we're discussing his latest release, which is Beyond the Black Crack, by the Reverend
Dwight Frizzell.
Dwight Frizzell, thank you. Which was originally issued in 1976 as a limited edition vinyl of 200 copies, came out again on Paradigm Discs in the 90s on a CD, and is now reissued as a vinyl. How many copies?
500 for
500.
Now.
500?
Yeah.
Okay, available from?
All good bookstores. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I saw Curse Go Back in Conor Donlan's bookshop on Broadway.
Yeah, Broadmarket.
So I was there. It had pride of place. So,
yeah, no.
You obviously get around with it.
You won't take anything else, though. I've tried passing even some sound poetry things. It's got to be literary. Some reason.
Yeah.
But he's done quite well with it, so I think you should go more into vinyl. I don't see why not.
No.
What's he got to lose?
So,
here comes the slowed down police siren. Most of this track is at half speed.
Right.
A lot of it's...
I think it said reduced speed clarinet or something.
Yeah, that was that. What we were just listening to was all at half speed.
So does he engineer it himself? Is he sort of...
Well, there's this photo inside the booklet, the gatefold of the booklet, which is the pyramid. This is recorded on top of a pyramid because it had these nice reflecting sounds coming off the concrete.
Where was the pyramid?
In McCoy Park, Independence, Missouri.
Oh.
Very much in the heart of Mormon territory.
Right.
Well, it's a concrete pyramid.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of big Mormon churches just in that area. This whole side is like a suite of pieces, so it'll crossfade into the next track. We might as well talk over it for a bit.
Yeah, sure.
So what was I saying? Yes, so 1976, and this track, we've now moved into the next track, which is Pre-Transformation of Turtle to Bird. And it's recorded on top of the same pyramid, except this is during the daytime.
Right.
It's actually a kid's playground, this area. It's subsequently been demolished. And now it's just a green area with busy roads running around it. But so this is Dwight playing percussion and flutes and stuff, and yeah. and several young children.
Right.
And recorded in 76, just prior to this record being put together.
And can I mention the extra material, even though we're not going to play any of it?
Well, the extra material comes with the CD edition from the 90s. Yeah,
there's
See, this is the thing with, you know, archival stuff. On the vinyl, you can't get any extra material. It's already a 50-minute-plus album.
Yeah.
So, but there was lots of other stuff, similar material, which I think is great.
I was intrigued by the one of the tracks. I'll just, even though it's not on this LP, can I just mention the title?
Mention what you like.
Okay. Well, there's a track on the extra material called Destruction, The Slaying of Hyperion, The Drowning of Helio, Suicide of Selene, and The Wandering Madness of Basilea. President Truman's A-bomb radio broadcast about Hiroshima is heard along with children's voices electronically altered.
Yeah.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
But we'll go back to... Any thoughts about the turtle heart? Do we know what this is?
Well, there's a lot of turtles. He kind of doodles turtles, makes turtles out of various materials. He had a bit of a turtle fixation for a while, for some reason. I don't know.
Okay.
The thing with Dwight, as you might gather by his titles, which are quite lengthy, he's quite verbose.
Yeah.
He's a very talkative... He can talk for a long time about the concepts behind these pieces, and you may still be as baffled as you were before the conversation started. But isn't there somewhere in here a little quote? And also, there's a lot of sleeve notes on the record, aren't there? I mean, each track has a story to it, where it's all fleshed out.
Yeah.
So, although...
Did you go to one of his church services?
No, he doesn't do... He doesn't get behind the pulpit.
He doesn't? Okay.
No. We did go to church.
Did
you? Yeah, we went to a Mormon church, a really incredible one, with a spiral, looked like a spaceship from the outside and inside. It was like this spiral that just went like a vortex in the middle of the church as a roof.
Uh-huh.
But extremely kind of... Like just one big spire.
Yeah.
But instead of it being like an ordinary spire, it was a spirally spire.
Right.
So that was quite an impressive building to go in. So we went there just for a lunchtime service. It was a bit odd going in there for me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but there's church after church everywhere you go. Well, particularly in that area, because it's like one of the hubs of Mormonism. The big Temple of Mormon is there.
Isn't that Salt Lake City?
Well, I don't know. I think so, but there's other holy ground in Independence as well.
Right.
So there are, you know, there's a number of very substantial sites there. Also, a fantastic art gallery.
Did he convert you to anything?
No.
Okay.
He might have baptized me a few times with beer.
Right.
But no. No. What do you mean?
I'm just kidding. Well, you know, with accompanying the Reverend Frizzell to a Mormon church.
Yes.
Was he trying to?
You do have to pinch yourself occasionally in these situations.
Yeah.
No. You know, it's like, no. He's a really sweet guy, and I get on really well with him. And yeah, he's just an old beatnik.
Is he?
He's an old beatnik. Look at the photos.
Yes, he looks a bit. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And a hippie, of course.
He's got a.
Bandana. Yeah, long hair.
But that's 76.
He wouldn't look out of place in the Mothers of Invention circa 68, would he?
No.
I mean.
What about the other guy on the front, or is that.
The other player?
Is he the. You said he was a bit of a wild guy in this chat.
It's Michael Roach, is his name, and he was just one of the. He was on the foundation course at the Art Institute, and so he ended up coming along. And he's actually he's got quite a big presence on the album, you know, sort of playing clarinet and doing a lot of the vocals, grabbing the mic and just shouting down it. And a lot of those parts got used on the album. But yeah, he dropped out of the art school fairly quickly. No idea where he is now.
No.
But, you know, a lot of these people are almost virtually unidentified, because it was just open doors and any student could come in and contribute. And, same with the concert that I did with him. It's like at the end, for the last 20 minutes of the show, we faded out and the audience were allowed to grab instruments from a table and do whatever they wanted. So there were, you know, a lot of kind of that year's intake of younger Oh, it's just playing the one track. It should. It's a suite, so it should just. Yep. So here we got him recording Rain. Right. And this lovely sound that comes in now. And then in a moment, you hear Rupert's manufacturing factory cutting timber in a place called Blue Springs. So let's just hear a bit of this.
Yep. Okay, well, thank you very much to Clive Graham for coming in and bringing Beyond the Black Crack, the latest release on Paradigm Discs by the Reverend Dwight Frizzell. That last track was actually called Nocturnal, soundtrack to a film, partially recorded at Rupert's Manufacturing.
Yeah.
What did they manufacture?
That was the sawmill sounds that you hear right at the very end of the track.
Right.
I mean, it's only a 2-minute piece.
Yeah.
But,
And this track this is called Fly By Night.
Yeah. Clarinet, tenor sax, electronics, a bit of electric guitar. Recorded on top of the pyramid again.
Right.
It's only a little pyramid. I mean, it's not there anymore, but I've got the photo of it here. It's just a very basic setup.
Yeah.
On a small...
And we think that possibly Beyond the Black Crack means something to do with going disappearing into a black hole, some sort of apocalyptic vision of the future.
Yeah, something of that nature. And, you know, the people who listen to this record, you're now a soul survivor.
Right.
Join the gang. You're one of the soul survivors who's gone through the black crack, man. What a strange record, eh?
Indeed.
Yeah. That's it, isn't it? We're out of time, aren't we? You wind it up.
Okay. Well, that's it. We're playing Beyond the Black Crack by the Reverend Dwight Frizzell, issued on Paradigm Discs by Clive Graham, who was in the studio today to reminisce about his trip to Kansas.
Yeah.
And fortunately, you didn't disappear into the black hole. You made it through the other side.
Soul survivor.
Yeah. We'll be right back.